is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. I'm actually recording this early in the morning on Wednesday, the 5th of February. Hopefully, this episode should be out before noon on the same day. To all the new listeners out there, if you are a new listener, be sure to subscribe to the program. That way, when a new episode comes out, you immediately get a new one. And also, a lot of podcasts desperately gag for ratings and reviews. I actually don't think they seem to matter with the popularity of the show, nor do I care. But you know what? If you like the show, rate and review. If you don't like the show, you know, say something funny and negative. 0 stars, it doesn't really bother me at all. But I do ask, if you give mine a negative review, that's fine. But then go and give a podcast you like a good review, because you wouldn't want to define yourself just by what you hate. That would make you a twat. Right, now that I've called the new listeners twats, let's go for it. Let's jump straight into the NBL news. LaMelo Ball has returned to the United States, allegedly without saying goodbye to anyone in the team or management, or very few. Ball was supposed to stay with the Hawks till the end of the season, obviously. All a man has is his word and his balls, and you shouldn't break either of them for anyone or anything. Do with that what you want. RJ Hampton has also returned to the United States. My question to you, the listeners out there, is did either have as good a season as Brian Bowen last year with the Sydney Kings? I think LaMelo Ball did, so we'll kind of take him off the table. But I will say about Bowen versus the both of them, the greatest ability is availability, and Bowen had it in spades. Bowen helped a team make, and then he helped them in the finals, playing 15 minutes a game, did his little role. I remember him having two good games that he swung in the Kings' favor, so he had a good season. Neither Hampton nor Ball played more games than Bowen. So them combined played less than Brian Bowen. Per 36 minutes, Bowen scored 0.6 of a point less than RJ Hampton, shot a better field goal percentage than both of them, shot a better three-point percentage than both of them, out-rebounded RJ Hampton, and had equal or less turnovers than both of them. Brian Bowen didn't get drafted. He went just outside the second round, or didn't go at all, but then was promptly signed by the Indiana Pacers. If his measure of a season gets you to outside of the second round, but a two-way deal in the NBA, what does that say about Ball and Hampton? We'll see when the draft comes in June. Other news, Grant Kelly, owner of the 36ers, and Mitch Creek went at it post-game after the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix lost to the Sixers in Adelaide. I don't know what was said. I don't know who was the instigator, so on and so forth, but I believe a fine has been handed out to Mitch Creek. If you want to hear more about that, the Brad and Body podcast, you can hear Body Nodge and Brad Rosen talk about that. And also, Body's got a great thing about Joey Wright as well. So pause this, type into the search bar, Brad and Body, go and like and subscribe and listen to that. Paul Smith on Indigenous Round. This is a charged issue, but let's go through it. So obviously he said his comments, if you want to clarify them, he hasn't taken them down from Twitter. You can definitely go and check them out. What he basically said was that he thought that the design of the jersey was talking about the Perth Wildcats championship and travel, and he didn't like that. I thought, well, let's strip this back, right? First of all, let's strip this back to what is the intention or mission statement of the Indigenous Round? Because that to me is important to me. So looking at it, and this is from the media released by the NBL, the round will recognize and acknowledge Indigenous culture and basketball across Australia and New Zealand. If that's the mission statement of the Indigenous round and the jerseys and the whole spectacle, to recognize and acknowledge Indigenous culture and basketball, I don't think the Wildcats or Richard Wally flew in the face of that mission statement. In fact, quite the opposite. I thought the integration of basketball and Indigenous culture, in particular in this instance, Noongar culture, was great. Also, there are over 500 Indigenous nations or tribes, if you can call them that, and I can't name them all, let alone tell you the ins and outs of each one's storytelling machinations. So to put that in perspective, Europe has a similar landmass. It contains 44 countries, and think how varied they are. You know, 44 is a lot less than 500. So therefore, to say what is going on in Sydney or New South Wales should apply to Perth or Western Australia is the equivalent of saying what applies in Bulgaria should mirror that in Paris, France. Long story short, I trust Richard Wally on the matter. Dr. Richard Wally on the matter. But let's put that to one side and do your own research on that. What I want to look at is Indigenous round a little bit further. So also in that media release, it says from the NBL, it says we will contribute proceeds from the sales of the Indigenous jerseys towards the development of young Indigenous players. My question from that is then is what percentage of the sales? 0.001%? 10%? 90%? It could be any percentage. And then my next question is, where's the money going? Is it going to a foundation? I don't know of any foundations for the development of basketball in young Indigenous players. So my question is then, what percentage and where's it going? And the only thing that sparked my interest in this is sort of the bushfire donations to the Red Cross and the proportion that's going somewhere. Certainly not accusing first ever of the NBL of anything like that. Just asking the question. Next point in that media release says, the NBL will work with its key shareholders to develop a reconciliation action plan to support the national reconciliation movement. I thought, fabulous. First of all, what are you doing there and how's it progressing? So two questions I'll kind of follow up on. At the end of it all, hopefully I think we do continue to see Paul Smith on Twitter. I think on their website at TSE it has no robots, just good humans, I think it is. And Paul Smith is most definitely a good human. He's funny, he's engaging, he's passionate. I hope after this he doesn't feel the need to exclude himself from Twitter and social media and engaging with fans. I really enjoyed it. Was this a misstep? More than likely. Another piece of news. NBL Overtime and NBL Media has been criticized this year for being skewed towards being too Melbourne-centric and, more importantly, unfairly harsh or ignorant or ignoring teams from the other states, namely Sydney, who are on top of the ladder all year. Well, I thought NBL Overtime and the NBL Media was very courteous in letting this affair go through to the keeper, as well as the embarrassing leak in the roof in Wollongong. Neither of these two issues made its way onto NBL Overtime or onto the NBL website. So, you know, is the NBL Media unfair? Is it not? If it is, I just don't get it. Let's go into the games, okay? That's why we come here, to look at the games. That's what's important. First game of the round. Melbourne United hosted the Perth Wildcats. This was the open-air game in the tennis centre. The foul calls on Plumlee were terrible, soft and inconsistent, and they just sapped the life out of this game. I'm not ringing alarm bells for Perth. Like, I think they're still the most talented, best team in the NBL. They played this game without Tarico White, who's a 15 to 20-point scorer, and still no Damian Martin, which I think has just sort of fallen back into the shadow, but he is their starting point guard. He is a defensive juggernaut and an offensive rebounder and a great player. So that's, I guess, why I'm still not worried about Perth or worried about this performance. Norton also got in early foul trouble. It forced Britt into the game, and he just wasn't ready for the full court pressure, let alone the full court pressure from Shea Illy. And it showed, and there was one time he had the ball, and he was just struggling to progress it past halfway, got to the other end, took a shot, and you know, he's a young kid. It's just that simple. And he shouldn't have been in that position, but fouls put him in that position. Injury put him in that position. My question coming out of this game, and I think I put it on Twitter, did David Barlow's foul trouble force Melbourne into its most effective lineup? Shea Illy, Mitch McCarron, Chris Golding, Sean Long, JLA, Achul? I thought that was a really nice looking lineup. And if you certainly sort of maybe tinker with taking out McCarron or Illy, more than likely Illy, and putting in Trimble, you got yourself a team. I really do disagree on people saying that the open air games affect the shooting. Now, I think they do a wee bit, but not to the extent that we saw in this game. I think the biggest factor was guys not stepping up to the moment and getting scared amongst the spectacle. You look at, like, Cotton was ready for it, McCarron was ready for it, Golding was ready for it. Cotton and Kay were good. Plumlee would have been good if afforded the right to do it. Golding didn't shoot great. McCarron is a gym rat who just goes for it. And then JLA is 5 pounds of irrational confidence in a 10-pound bag. And they were the guys that played to their sort of standard. Not their best standard, but really open air, like a bit of puff of breeze. Like, these guys have never played outside. Can't go for it. Not going to be able to do it. Melbourne winning that game 77-67. Next game of the round, this one was, boy, this had everything. It had drama, intrigue, cat fighting, reality TV on the hardwood. This was New Zealand hosting the Adelaide 36ers, winning at 113-89. It felt like it was a 100-point loss for the 36ers. Daniel Johnson was broken post-game, not confident about the possibility of finals, labelled the team crustaceans, shellfish, and it showed.
DJ, tough loss there. Mathematically, still a chance for the playoffs, though.
Oh, not really. I think playing like that, we don't give ourselves much chance to win any games.
Where did it get away from you today?
It's our defence. Can't get stops, no rotations, no talk. People just being selfish.
You had such a great first half. Personally, do you think the Breakers just did a much better job on you in that second half?
I don't think so. I think we just stopped moving the ball. People were taking bad shots.
Yep. It'll be a tough one to recover from, you think?
I mean, we've got to bounce back. We've got another game on Sunday. I mean, we owe it to our fans to come out and give a better effort than that.
Adelaide's first possession, Randall took it from the baseline, dribbled it 20 times, I know because I counted twice. No one else touched it, and then after a miscommunicated cut with Obi Chay, made a pass that saw the ball soar into the third row, a bad turnover. That was their first possession of the game. Not, you start a game like that, you're in trouble. Later in the game, I forgot if it was the third or fourth quarter, I think it was the third. Jack McVay and Randall went back and forth at each other like cats and dogs in not a timeout, but a huddle on the court after I think it went out of bounds or maybe a foul. Not a good look. It followed a play in which Jack McVay had the smaller Gerald Weeks sealed in the post, and Randall totally ghosted him. Didn't make a pass, dribbled into McVay, retreat dribbled back out, and then eventually took a shot, and McVay just lost it. Just lost it. And to be honest, although I wasn't in there to hear what he said, probably rightfully so. Jordan Nartey, it was good to see him shake off that shaky finish in Perth. You hate to see a guy struggle like that and affect his game going forward. And he just kept his head up, and I take my head off to that because it's not easy. Adelaide shot 57% from the field, 61% from inside the line, and 54% from three. They allowed... that was New Zealand. Shit. New Zealand shot 57% from the field, 61% from inside the line, 54% from outside it, whereas Adelaide shot 50% from the field, 40% from three, 10 of 25. Is that right? Yeah, whatever. New Zealand scored 26 points from turnovers. Adelaide only scored 6. Yikes. Johnson played well, but was having a career quarter in the first quarter and was gassed and was asking for a sub early on. Like, that's... you can't do that. Griffin only played the 13 minutes. I think we saw Adelaide's biggest deficiency here. On the season, Adelaide is 9th in three-point makes, 9th in 3 points attempted, and 9th in three-point percentage at 36.2%, and it showed in this game. That's not a good look. And then also with Adelaide, looking at their sort of season deficiencies, they're 8th in assists per game, despite being 2nd in points per game by 0.4 of a point as well, I might add. So they're almost, they're 2nd last in assists and almost 1st in points. Last season, they were 2nd in assists per game and 1st in points per game. And that was with the supposed antichrist to point guards everywhere, Nathan Sobey. So the numbers tell us one thing, the sort of prevailing thought tells us another. Joey Wright's press conference. Let's do this. I'm going to play the audio. Hopefully this is an infringement of NBL media rights. And you can have a listen. Have a listen to this.
Well, look, I coach the same from the beginning to the end, preseason to the last game. I don't coach for playoffs. I don't coach for, you know, to beat this team more than that team. I coach the same way, and we try to preach that message throughout. It seems that, you know, as the generations come along, they had to have something to play for other than that game. I think this is one of the most beautiful games, you know, a sport you can play. I just think for all the reasons, basketball is just a great sport, and a lot of guys can't get out there and play it just for the love of it. If we got 3 games left and they can't get out there and play this thing just for the love of basketball, you get to bounce a ball. I mean, you get to bounce a ball and people look at you and clap for you. And some of them just gonna be a rude awakening when they're selling computers or Xerox copiers. Ain't nobody gonna clap for them. So they, you know, a lot of them will miss out on what this is all about. But, you know, I'm coach the same. I'm going to be in the gym every day. We're going to be doing individuals. We're going to be working. And the guys that want to participate, I'm happy for them too. The guys that don't, I'm happy for them to sit their butt on the bench.
My question is who was he talking about? Who was he saying is selfish? Who was he saying can't get up? I think you've got a couple options. He's either referring to Harry Froehlich about not being able to get up. I think last year he had a better year with the NBA kind of looming around. Maybe he's talking about Froehlich. Eric Griffin seems a likely candidate, just the way he's had to go to the bench, the few minutes he played in this game. You know, when he talks about being sort of selfish, is it Jerome Randall? You know, Anthony Drimmick had a tough game in this one. All of those guys had dips in their minutes played. Now, they were down so much, most of the starters would get taken out for the bench, but that's my question to you guys out there, is who was Joey Wright talking about in that press conference? Boddy Nodge, spoke about him before on the Brad and Boddy podcast, has a suspicion that this may be the last year of Joey Wright as coach of the 36ers. Want to know more about that? Jump on and listen to that podcast. I won't steal their thunder. Let's jump on to the next game of the round. This was Cairns hosting Illawarra, winning at 99-75. In this game, the roof remained watertight. It was in Cairns, so obviously it did. I actually never got an answer to the question, why didn't Emmett Nah play? If you're on Twitter or Facebook, please send me a message. I just don't know why. It could be harmful, could be harmless, don't know. Illawarra shot 27% from three. Illawarra had 19 turnovers. Cairns went 19 of 23 from the foul line. Darrington Hobson, was not paying attention in a huddle after AJ Ogilvy requested of him to move the ball on the previous play. Before that, Hobson cast up 2 3-pointers in a row. Just by the by, Hobson is a career 18% from the outside. Flynn, they had the thing, he wasn't paying attention. Flynn then, as they're going onto the court, is asking, in the huddle, is going, are you with me? Are you listening? And then as they're walking off on back onto the court, Hobson and Flynn kind of get into it, with Flynn going like, what are you talking about?
Let it sing. All right? This time down, let's go. Hand exchange. All right? We're in exchange. We're getting all the way through. We're coming back to play. You with me? Oi, you with me? Hand exchange and we're going at the hand drag. All right? Attack the guy at the bottom of the eye.
1, 2, 3. Pause. Let's do it, fellas.
Matt Flynn there, the coach of the Illawarra Hawks. I think I married up the coaches of Cairns and Illawarra there. Matt Flynn, of course. Pete?
And a little back and forth going on there. Sorry, Pete, jumping in between Flynn and Hobson. Just wasn't sure that his input was focused and listening in the timeout.
Well, he had the few words to say, Flynn, that let's get the ball zinging. And that was from that last play. Hobson took his first three, wasn't a bad look. But then it was an offensive rebound. He get a chance to reset it, get a good look. But he decides to take another semi-heat check. And you can't really heat check if you haven't hit the first one.
Not a good look again. Hobson went on to have 5 points, shot 2 of 8 from the field, 4 assists, 3 turnovers in 22 minutes. So good luck. I'll see you out there. I wish there was more to say about this Illawarra team, but there isn't. They're just not very good. The talent is down due to terrible import scouting, and outside of Detch, very few younger locals have improved. A reminder that last season this team won 12 games and finished tied 6th with New Zealand. There's no reason why if they'd got their imports right, they couldn't have done it again. The thought that this team would be better without LaMelo Ball. What an interesting concept. Better without LaMelo Ball. It hasn't happened. And that's not to say they would be better with him. I think they probably would. They couldn't be any worse. With Ball, they were 3-9. And I think all three of those wins came against Cairns. Without Ball, they've been 2-11. And their last two games are against the Melbourne United and the Sydney Kings. Safe to say they'll be 2-13 without LaMelo Ball. Illawarra Hawks, better without Ball? Behave. Next game of the round, Brisbane hosted the Melbourne United, and this was a really good game. Not a hugely high scoring, 87-83, Brisbane taking this one. But boy, what a game. Lamar Patterson and Hodgson were remarkable in this game. Trimble and were brilliant. He was playing with a passion and a freedom we haven't seen. Presumably looking at this game and how he played, he'd been caged and dissuaded from playing his natural game. All the team was behind him when he was gone a big run. So the idea that this locker room was divided on import and local lines, like I've had numerous people tap me on the shoulder in private messages on Facebook, Twitter, so on. I've had a number of them say that sort of stuff, and I was just—it's all like, who's that from? Oh, it's someone I know within a member who sits close to the court. It's like, oh, stop it. If you want to blame, so my thing is, if you want to blame the new guys, go ahead. Go ahead. If you want to blame the new guys and the outsiders, the Americans, go ahead. You can do it. I'm just growing tired of it. I'd prefer to hold everybody accountable and hold everyone to a higher standard than get into the muck and mire of rumor. Going back to Trimble, Al Michaels in basketball, he keeps on saying that line, like he's not holding anything back. That was Trimble. He just played this game. You know who he looked like? Bryce Cotton. Just not in the volume, but in the style, the incisive manner, the quickness, the step. He was great to watch in this game and dominated as a result. The huge rebound disparity, where could we be without it? Yes, it's on Sean Long, but it's also on everyone. Defensive rebounds for Melbourne. JLA, Barlow, Long, Kidd, Golding all had 9 rebounds in 121 minutes of court time. That's 3/4 of a game. Lamar Patterson had 8 defensive rebounds in 34 minutes on his own. 5v1, and they're coming out 1 defensive rebound on top. Nah, not going to do it. Sean Long was poor, though, in this one, most definitely, not denying that. And when you're the big guy, you know, there is a Venn diagram of, if you want to call it, blame. And, you know, Sean Long does take a big slice, as do those other guys. Melbourne didn't look particularly good at any time with McCarron as the primary ball handler. I wasn't mad about that look. Let's talk about Mika Vekona and his dirty hit on Stanton Kidd. I hated it. I really, really hated it. Now, I think earlier in the year, Braun was fined for rough conduct on review. Is my question to you guys out there is the same going to happen to Vekona? His shot to the face was reckless, at the very least. I think it was 100% deliberate. It made head-high contact. It drew blood. He should be fined and suspended. This was the equivalent, I don't like to make NBA comparisons, but this was when, if you remember, Meta World Peace or Ron Artest elbowed James Harden in the head. It was the same thing, but the difference was Mika Vekona wasn't celebrating a score. This was totally intentional. He sized him up. He knew what was going on. It was a dirty play, and I hated it. I hated it. I hate when old, unskillful players diminish the class of the game and the show of skill within the game. Anyone could do what Vekona did and have the same impact on the game. A butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker can make that play. If I can do that play, why am I paying to watch it? Dirty player. If you want to impact the game, do it with skill. And if you want to punch someone in the face, turn around, look them in the eye, and punch them in the face. Bothered me big time. I didn't hate Long in this game, going back to that. I didn't hate him. He had some nice post touches, a lot of poise in the post. It's just putting his whole game together. His play is a little immature and fragile. You know, stripped of 2 rebounds, 1 by Patterson, 1 by the Mika Vekona. You got to have strong hands on that and not have it knocked away for steals, you know, especially when you're struggling on the boards. You know, really fucking go up there and grab it. Stuff like that drives you nuts. Next game of the round, you can hear me, I've shifted my papers. Next game of the round, Perth Wildcats hosted the Sydney Kings. This was the one I had circled in my calendar. I was super excited. It was going to be a spectacle. 1v2, Top and Bogut, Plumlee. And then Bogut doesn't play. Just a deflated spectacle. It was still a nice game, but it was what it was. The Kings, here's a little note for you. The Kings have never won this season without Andrew Bogut. Just shows you his impact. You got to love Gleeson taking the early stand-up timeout and the dressing down of his players, telling the cameraman to F off. That's great. Is it courteous? No, it's not courteous. It's not gentlemanly. But Gleeson's in battle. This is nothing personal. I'm sure that camera guy at the end of it got, I'm sorry about that, but you know, this is our team. We got to do what's best. The cameraman's not taking it. Or woman is not taking that personally. Come on. Nick Kay looks better. Why? I think it's because he's back to playing his normal position at the four. Just that simple. He's sharing the court again with a big body. The toll on him taking screens is not as great, or setting screens is not as great. Plumlee didn't play a lot of minutes in this game, and neither did Majuk, really, but they still combined for 29 minutes, of which most of that time was shared with Kay. So it just shifts him to his natural position and changes the matchup for him, and he's flourishing. Clint Steindl, 19 points, 5 of 7, you tell me. Kasper Ware, again, 1 of 8 from the outside. We've seen this so often, it's not an aberration, it's the norm. Can he string together good three-point shooting outings in the finals? Boy, that's the big question for me. Jayshon Tate, brilliant, 23 points, 76%. However, 2 of 5 from the foul line. In the finals, that number's going to increase. I hate to sort of say, oh, the Kings are good, but I have these major concerns with them. And then Xavier Cooks, 4 points, only 2 of 5. 5 field goal attempts from a boomer. Well, would have been. 9 rebounds, 4 assists in 25 minutes. When's he going to have that like big game? And he's having a great impact on games, but I'm just like this was a guy who everyone was like up in arms about the league, totally shifting the paradigm of the league, and it's unfair, and salary cap, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is the guy who people were getting upset about? I want more. Cotton and the MVP case. This round, and for me, it kind of comes down to a number of things, but free throws being one of them. Cotton was 10 of 11 from the foul line in this game and 5 of 8 versus Melbourne. That's 19 free throw attempts. That was the most across the round by a lot. No other player really came close. I mean, Trimble had, in the great game he had against Brisbane, he had 9 free throw attempts. So Cotton beat him in both. Cotton had more free throw attempts than New Zealand had in one game. They had 9 free throw attempts against Adelaide. So my point is with Cotton, like his ability to get to the line is the best in the NBL, behind Trimble, I think, which shows his worth. But he's looking at the stats, Cotton is 2nd in free throws made, 3rd in free throws attempted, and 81.3%, the 3rd highest percentage of those in the top 10 in free throw attempts, behind Trimble, or equal with Trimble, and behind Daniel Johnson, amazingly. The defensive attention he commands and his ability to take the game on and over is better than anyone else. He's done it routinely. That's why, for me, he's the MVP. Chris Anstey said in the telecast, and I paraphrase, a lot of Perth's offensive rebounding advantage is due to Damian Martin. And I was like, wow, that's very true. Damian Martin's sort of fallen out of the NBL conversation, having been injured for so long. But I thought that was true hearing it, but I thought, let's have a look into it. Martin is 3rd amongst guards in offensive rebounding. I think he's behind Sunday, Deck, and someone else. He's 22nd overall in offensive rebounds, which is pretty good for a guard who's missed time and is his age. I couldn't find a neat stat that showed how Perth's offensive rebounding percentage improves with Martin on. That's for one of the more mathematically minded analysts to do, if they want to do that. I'd love to see the stat, but I can only assume it goes up, and offensive rebounding, obviously such a huge part of that Wildcat team, that his return is, it just spells trouble for everyone else, which is really obvious to say, but still, I just want to make the point. Let's jump on to the next game of the round. This was Illawarra hosting the New Zealand Breakers, Watergate, as it's being called. I was criticised earlier in the week by a Rob on Facebook, and fairly so. I wasn't watching Illawarra Hawks games. Well, I guess that I can't be criticised this week because no one got to see this full game, called off due to the rain, as we all know. Illawarra and Matt Flynn's coach's pet, Darrington Hobson, with the 4 minutes and 55 seconds of a possible 37 minutes in this game. My question to everyone out there after this game is, are the New Zealand Breakers done for NBL 20? Can they make the top 4? Let's have a look. The Breakers are 13 wins, 13 losses, with 2 games left, at Brisbane and hosting Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. They're not catching Cairns, so let's look at Brisbane Bullets, who are 14 wins, 11 losses, and have 3 games remaining. They host New Zealand. At Perth, they host Cairns Taipans. So that's interesting. There's a game that separates them. If New Zealand beat Brisbane on the road and Southeast Melbourne, that's going to take them to 15 wins. Brisbane have to beat Perth or Cairns. I mean, I can conceivably see if Brisbane lose this one to the Breakers, they could go on to lose those two and drop out of the four. It's not over for New Zealand. And let's say they end up on a tied record. Well, if the season were to end right now with the tied record, New Zealand do have the better percentage, 1.014 compared to 1.013. And I look at Southeast Melbourne. That's a game where New Zealand are going to probably win and put on some decent points. So really interesting to see what's going to go, going to happen there. Just quietly, the head-to-head between New Zealand and Brisbane. New Zealand are 2 wins, 1 loss, winning at home and on the road. So this one will determine whether it's an advantage to either side. Really interesting what's going on in New Zealand, though. Let's jump on to the next game of the round. Adelaide hosted the South East Melbourne Phoenix. This is the one in which Grant Kelly and Mitch Creek supposedly had words. A lot of people have been dissecting this game and saying, well, like, this shows that DJ and Randall, blah, blah, blah. This game didn't matter. Their season was over. Their game was against New Zealand, and they totally screwed the pooch. This game was a stats free-for-all. Like, I don't know how anyone could have made sense of this. No team, you know, this is them against the second worst team in the NBL by record, and a team that historically gives up a lot of points. Like, the stats in this game just mean nothing to me. But maybe they mean something to someone else. I don't know. As I said, stats free-for-all. My nan could have had 20 and 10. What's next for the 36ers? Because their season's done, you know. Their finals chances were slim to nil, and Slim had left town. Looking at this game, it's improving three-point shooting and freedom of movement. And I talked about this all before, but, you know, sixth in three-point percentage after this one, last in three-point makes, last in 3 points attempts by a long way. And I don't think that's a result of Joey's system. I really do think it's personnel. If the shots are there available, I don't think Joey has a problem with good threes. Looking at the other side of it, the Southeast Melbourne defense, which is just horrible. There's one thing about being up tempo and playing a bit of defense, that's fine, but they just play the league's worst defense. All they had to be was like up lower middle defense, and they would have won a lot more games. And looking at the stats, they give up the worst opponent field goal, worst opponent 3-point percentage, force the second least turnovers despite playing a high pace, give up the third most offensive rebounds, give up the second most assists, give up the second most points. But they don't actually play the highest pace. They're third in pace behind Adelaide and Sydney, apparently, by realgm.com. They're second last in opponent effective field goal to Illawarra and true shooting percentage, again, to Illawarra. So they just don't play defense across the board anywhere at any time. I don't know what to say. I can't make sense of this game and these stats. It was whoever wanted them. If Randall wanted 35, if Jack McVeigh wanted 35, it was there for the taking. Matthew is a guy on Twitter. He knows who he is. His surname starts with H. I don't like to give out people's surnames on here for privacy reasons. Great fella. Really good follow. So if you're on Twitter, try and find him. I wish I had his handle. I don't. I got chastised because I called Randall and Johnson not top 15 players in the NBL. And they have been noted in the MVP top 15. So, yeah, and I said, Randall, you know, 35 points, 58% from the field against the worst defense in the NBL, while conceding 26 points on the other end to John Robertson. I stand by that. I really don't think Johnson and Randall are in the top. I don't think they're in the top 10. I can say that with certainty. Top 15, there's a little bit of wiggle room in areas, you know, in spots 13, 14, 15. But even then, I'm still pretty confident. And you can have a look at the list. And with that MVP list, of the 15 that's there, there's no Trimble, who I think is a better talent than both those guys. I really do. And the reason why I say that is because of those free throw attempts. Like, Trimble just gets to the line. Like, when you play through his actual style, when you play to his strengths, he's a really good player. But let's go back to this Adelaide Southeast Melbourne game. Sorry to digress. Ben Madjan, 27 minutes, 2 of 7 from the outside, 2 were wide open. He was as undressed as a salad. What? 4 turnovers. On the season, Ben Madjan is 44th in three-point percentage at 31.8%. That's behind the likes of Nick Kay, Cam Glidden, who's a good shooter but's had a bad year, Mitch Norton,
Sunday Detch, and Mitch Creek, who actually hits a fair few of them as well. He's 23rd in makes at 1.6 a game. That's the equivalent of a Mitch Creek. And he's behind the likes of LaMelo Ball, who made more than that. The kid played in 12 games. He's 22nd in minutes per game, 28.2. So I really define on what teams think is their talent by the minutes they give them. If you're 22nd in minutes, you're considered in the top 20, top 25 anyway. You know, and he gives more than just scoring in threes. I know that, but geez. Just quietly, Ben Magin is not signed through NBL 21. It's a team option for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Yeah. On that, with Ben Magin, I'll be looking in the future with future podcasts. I'll be doing a breakdown of the off seasons of teams that won't be in the finals. So, namely, Illawarra, Southeast Melbourne, and Adelaide, looking at who they've got on contract, who they don't, where they rank statistically, and maybe what needs they need to address. And I might even bring in some people to have a chat about that as well. But that was the games rounds and the talking points as I saw them from the games. Now let's look at what are wider NBL storylines, the NBL awards. So they've come out with the list. First of all, I want to say, again, Melbourne bias, M for Mary BL. The selectors, Cam Tregar from Queensland, Santa Maria from Melbourne, Casey Frank from New Zealand, Lockie Reed from Perth, John Casey from Adelaide, Roy Ward from Melbourne, Matt Logue from New South Wales, Olgan Ulick from New South Wales, and Greg Davis from, I believe, Queensland as well. Queensland have two teams, Melbourne have two teams, so they've got two representatives. New South Wales, yeah, everyone's represented. So when it matters, the NBL does the right thing. Let's jump in. I won't go through the people that are nominated. I've said with the MVP award that Trimble wasn't nominated. He wasn't going to win anyway. So I think the lists are absolutely watertight, and the team, all of them, done a really good job of doing this, really well considered. I wonder how they did it, though. Were they all in the same room, or was it by a conference call? Was it kind of like 12 Angry Men? And if it was like 12 Angry Men, that courtroom drama, who would have been the main stand-up, tear-down, I disagree? I'm going to go ahead and say probably Cam Tregar. I'll get in touch with them and see who they say. MVP, who do I think? I think it's Bryce Cotton. I think LP's nipping at his heels, so we'll see how the last couple of games go. Most improved, it's got to be Will Magnay. Like, not only where he was from last year, but where he's come through this year, where he's gone from bench to bona fide starter. I think it's him. The other one I wanted to talk of who wasn't on the list and about him is Mitch Creek, missed a year in the NBL, has gone from being a, and I got Alex on Twitter criticizing me as well for this fairly. I called Mitch Creek a role player when he was last in the NBL with Adelaide. He wasn't a role player. He's gone from a starter to a star, and I feel like that chasm is a much greater chasm from bench player to role player or star. You know what I mean? To go from starter to star, to go from a number two or three option to a number one and a bona fide number one and an MVP, that is improvement. That takes a lot. But nonetheless, I still think most improved from the list given is Will Magnay. Sixth man. This is the one that's got the most debate about, so I'll come back to it. Defensive player of the year. This is a tough one too, and the Perth Wildcat fans are upset that no Wildcat was nominated. I mean, Damian Martin probably should have been on the list, but he wasn't going to win it. He's missed too much time, so I understand why he wasn't. Again, like, I just feel like this list was, it was never, there's no, if you're slighted by this list, I think you're reaching a little bit. And I know Trevor Gleeson has been, and it's a bit like, pushing a bit of a narrative, but bless his heart, he likes to do that. Defensive player of the year. The name thrown out is DJ Newball. I think it's either Andrew Bogut or Casper Ware. I feel like that team has been, like, Perth, don't worry, give up the least amount of points, and I see why people say they are the best defense, and maybe they are, but the Kings have been really good defensively, and it's been so consistent all year, and they've built top spot on defense. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're the best defensive team is what I think I'm trying to say, and I know the stats don't say that. But I think they are still. And I think it's because of either Bogut or Casper Ware, and I'm leaning towards Casper Ware. He has worked so hard on defense this year, and he's been lit up a couple of times, but that's only because he plays in the most difficult position where he's getting screened, and it's part of their strategy to drop. We all know that. I just feel like he's anchored that whole team, and their team is based on defense, and he's the anchor of that. And I think it's either Casper Webb, maybe Andrew Bogut, but I don't think he's played enough games. He's missed two games, which is critical. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it is. And he just hasn't played the minutes. He only plays 20, 21 minutes a game or something like that. So that's my answer to Defensive Player of the Year. But DJ Newell's a good option too. That's a real tough one. Rookie of the Year, I think it's LaMelo Ball. I know he hasn't missed a lot of games. He's missed a heck of a lot of games. If Sunday Dech was eligible, that there'd be a conversation there because he's just played so many more games and played so well. But it's got to be LaMelo Ball, isn't it? It's not Terry Armstrong. It's not Hampton. It's not Kawhi Noy. He's missed too much time. It's LaMelo Ball. They've all missed time, but he's been the best in the time he played. For me, anyway. Let's go back now to sixth man. For me, there are four options here, and they're all pretty strong. And I put them in this order. I'm going to go reverse order. I have four candidates. I'll go reverse order. Eric Griffin, Brandon Ashley, Sean Bruce, and then Daniel Kickett. And I say that because he's shooting 54 from the field, 52 from the outside, 86 from the foul line. Bogut's missed time. Bogut's played less minutes. His have gone up. Like, man, Kickett's killing it. And I don't know what his points in that numbers are. I don't really need to see him. Like, he is their bench center, and it's a tough position to play, and he does it in such a weird, wonderful way with the shooting. Not a great defensive player. We all know that. I think it's him. And I feel really bad for Sean Bruce to miss out on an award, be it most improved or sixth man, but just feel like Kickett's been, like, he changes the whole game around him when he comes off the bench. Yeah, it's a tough one, though. But Brandon Ashley's the other one who's got a pretty good case. And Eric Griffin's got the stats behind him. He's the highest scorer off the bench. He's the highest rebounder off the bench. But he also plays the most minutes. I think it's either Kickett or Ashley, for my mind. Let's jump on. Coach of the Year. It wasn't in the list, and all teams and coaches are nominated. The first thought is Will Weaver, and not a bad pick at all. Top team all year. That's the first time that's ever been done. But looking more into it, what he's got out of Sean Bruce, Brad Newley's improved, Kickett's improved, and the injuries he's had to face. Lish, Moller, and to a lesser extent, Andrew Bogut. But I don't want to bring up Andrew Bogut because they've lost every time without him. So a really good case for Will Weaver. But for me, I'm actually going to say Dan Shamir is Coach of the Year, and here's why. If you look at it, five of the bottom 10 players in games played are breakers. Rob Lowe, Scotty Hobson, Corey Webster. I'm going to include him, but yeah, I know there's an asterisk there. Finn Delaney, RJ Hampton. They've had starters miss a combined 27 games. That's essentially a whole season. And if you include Corey Webster and the bench players, all their players have missed a total of 53 games. If you don't want to include Webster, it's 38. Not to mention the fact they've had to cut two players, I'd say one borderline at the start of the season and one mid-season. Chris Abekpa and Glenn Rice, obviously, mid-season. The turmoil and the change that they have overcome and where they're at now. And if they make the four, the case only gets stronger. Really tough to say whether they will or not. But still, for me, Dan Shamir. Why not Mike Kelly, who's outdone expectations? Expectations don't really blow my skirt up. Okay, so what? They were expected to be poor. People got that wrong. Okay, let's judge them on the actual talent that they have. Why is where they were predicted to finish at any bearing? I think Santa Maria said this, Liam Santa Maria. Any bearing on the actual job that's been done. It's like saying I was expected to getting punched in the face, but the guy ended up kicking me in the balls. So that's a surprise. Well, whatever. I don't know. That's a horrible analogy. But Kelly, they've lost multiple games to Illawarra, three, I think, and have been weak as water late in games, in multiple games, losing some of them. And a lot of them were directly a result of some pretty poor coaching decisions, be it rotation or that timeout that moved Kenny into the front court. Bunch of stuff. That to me is when a coach stands up in those minutes. And he's done a great year. He's had a great year, Mike Kelly. The record speaks for itself. But is he coach of the year? Not for me. But I can see why people might think that he is. Last thing. I'm calling this, okay, but just the tip. Might get in trouble for that. Who knows? This is a tip section. We're just looking around. Let's look at the next round of games. I'm going to do this lightning fast. New Zealand Breakers, I'm picking them to beat the Brisbane Bullets at home. I just think Brandon Ashley is the key matchup to watch there. I don't think they know how to handle him. He's long. He's athletic. He's got a great way of just finishing around the basket. And I think he's going to be the difference. Plus, like, the problem is who's going to guard LP? Oh, jeez. I'm still going with New Zealand. Screw it. Melbourne will beat Illawarra. Cairns are going to beat Adelaide in Adelaide, I think. I just think Adelaide are, while they had a good game against South East Melbourne, they're not for real. Sydney are going to beat South East Melbourne on the road. I sure hope for their sake they do. Otherwise, first spot is again up in the air. And then Perth are going to beat Brisbane in Perth. So Brisbane are going to take the two-loss round, and we're going to see a very interesting run to the finals as New Zealand then play South East Melbourne, and Brisbane take on Perth and Cairns in the Sunshine Stoush to end NBL 20. What a great year it's been. Holy moly. I've just gone over 40 minutes. Sorry about that, guys. Going to probably finish up in 45 minutes. Thanks very much. Rate, review. If you have an exception or take an exception or offense to anything in this episode, by all means, get in touch with me. Gmail, nblpocketpodcast@gmail.com, and Twitter at nblpocketpod. I'm pretty active on there. I really hope you have enjoyed this episode. Thanks very much. Ciao.